Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Listening live to In Much Less Detail, the podcast, where we cut through the noise and give you your NFL breakdown in much less detail. Here live on a Wednesday night, September the 21st, 2016. I'm Dre, he's Jay. NFL week two in the books, and one of us is looking pretty good on the season so far, and the other is looking for some answers. Jason, it's all about who's hot and who's not in week two. You get those teams that start off hot and everyone's talking them up, who's going to be there at the end, and everyone's looking at the 0-2 teams, what's wrong with so-and-so? So you know how it breaks down after week two. Who's hot, who's not? What's your take on the NFL so far?
Well, all I can say to start the week is you should be so lucky to be like me, because now I'm an expert.
Uh-oh. Well, 455 on the season? Is that expert level? It's not under 400 yet.
You know, 455 is a lot better than I thought I was.
So hang on, did I miscalculate? I'm sorry, 10 and 22 is not 455. It's
no, it's horrible.
It's 313. So yeah, 2 5 and 11s in a row. So 313, yeah. For both weeks and still at 313. So yeah, I miscalculated that one badly. Yeah, you actually are you and Jay Mariotti hanging out in the 300 levels.
No, I think if anything, I don't think in the 25 years we've been doing this, I don't think I'd be crazy to say that you and I have both had 2 weeks in a row this bad. It's happened. I mean, it just happened 2 weeks to start the season. So we've both had amazing weeks to start a year. We've both had 5-11s in the middle of a season. We've had 2-14s in the middle of a season. I strung together a couple of crappy ones there. So I guess that doesn't really put me in too much of a spot to say that I've read things, because apparently the things that have happened so far are completely out of what I thought they were going to be. So I think this has been more learning for me than anything else. Last week didn't, even though the result for me last week was the same as it was as the result of the first week, it didn't feel as bad. I don't know if that makes any sense. Because things that I was seeing, even in picks that I was making wrong, I still thought that, yeah, you know what, I saw that. Or a pick that I made wrong on the show when I made the pick, I'll point to Tampa Bay and Arizona. You know, I took Tampa Bay, just thought that Arizona was getting too much love, and then I laid out all the reasons why Arizona would cover the number. So I'm like, okay, maybe I should stick to what I you know, am more analytical about, instead of just going, well, that's just a too big of a number. And then, oh, well, you know, and then the Bucs aren't going to be as disciplined as the Patriots were, and Jameis Winston's going to try to be the hero and throw the ball, you know, and make turnovers. And that's exactly what happened. So I'm like, wow, yeah, okay.
You can't change up how you do things
on the number. So
you go with your gut. You look at the number. If it doesn't smell right, you go with your gut. So that's how you've always done it.
And So it's produced 2 5-11s, but I know that you will say on the other side, or you will at least attest to this is being the truth, that I'm perfectly capable of throwing out a 13-3 that makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, I'm certainly not feeling like the season's over at all, even though I have a 10-game lead. That is absolutely not how I'm feeling,
but that's
for sure.
But you have no excuses now.
No excuses. 10 games the first 2 weeks. I have no excuses. Ooh.
You gave me 10 games. You gave me 10 games in week one time. and you know what?
I think it was only 9. Don't make it out to be worse than it already was.
I'm pretty sure that after week
in a push.
9-0-1, I believe it was in that one. Yeah. So I guess I'll have to take this, you know, as sort of my justice. It was all going to even out. I'm sure we've had years that have started this badly. I'm sure we've had years that have started much better. I mean, your number, pretty good. You're off to a hell of a start. I remember that year that we kept talking about what a hell of a start you were off to because you were just having this amazing number, but you were still behind me. That was one of those where we both just jumped out of the gate like crazy. So, yeah, things that I didn't expect obviously happened. And then there were just some picks that were just, you know, you looked at the result and you went, wow, okay, San Diego and okay, Atlanta, you know, all those afternoon games. I didn't win a game after the early starts, so it was rough.
The ugliest of those afternoon games that you lost is probably the one that you didn't mention, which is the Rams somehow knocking off the Seahawks. I tell you, that's 3 in a row now for the LA/St. Louis Rams over Seattle. Yeah. And at least Seattle has an excuse this time, as Russell Wilson could barely move, but nonetheless, it's still. There's a matchup issue going on there, clearly.
Well, yeah, and we talk about teams that have the other team's number, and I'm usually wise to this one with the Rams beating up on the Seahawks. And I even went against that one, just looking at how awful that Rams performance was in week one, maybe overlooking a little bit of the fact that the Seahawks performance in week one wasn't all that much better.
Oh, no. No, it wasn't. So they could have easily lost to the Dolphins.
They should have lost to the Dolphins, and they deserved to lose to the Rams. And, you know, we look at this week three matchup that's setting up for them with San Francisco going there. I looked at the line on that game, and that's almost like a sucker bet now too. Everything to me. When you've had 2 5-11s, I hate to say it, every line looks like a sucker bet.
Sure. Everything, you know, and that's just second guess everything and that can't be right. No way.
Right. No, so that's basically that's sort of the funk that I'm in. I know we've both been in this funk where it feels like nothing that we pick is gonna come through. You just expect to lose the pick. So after that afternoon run on Sunday, I just expected to lose both of those picks that we disagreed on in prime time. And sure enough, Green Bay basically got outplayed, outcoached. Didn't even look like they showed up for that game on Sunday night. And then the Bears just, oh my God. I guess Carson Wentz is going to the Hall of Fame.
He's awesome. He can't be beaten. He never loses on Monday night or any other night. He is Carson Wentz. Yeah, he's getting the Jesus love that we were hoping Dak Prescott wouldn't get from winning his first game or his first two games. And Dak looked just fine as well against Washington, getting a big win there. But yeah, Carson Wentz, it doesn't hurt that you get a night of John Gruden filleting you. That's always going to make it seem like you're getting love, because that guy, when he sees a quarterback that he likes, he goes all in. It doesn't matter how big the penis is, he's going to suck it. It could be a mandingo. It doesn't matter. John Gruden is going to perform oral happiness if he sees a quarterback out there, and he's going to do it all night. Like, you can do it all night long. And that's what he did. It was incredible. And we should have expected that, of course. But the Bears will give your quarterback a reason to look that good. And that's pretty much why I picked against them, that and they can't protect Jay Cutler.
Pretty much the usual problems, although the Bears were hanging around in that game for a while. I mean, they kept giving themselves opportunities, but they're bad. I mean, the Bears aren't 0-16 bad. And this is sort of that other thing that starts to creep up now as we start getting deeper into the season, which is I can't say the unpredictability is going to start because it's been unpredictable for me already, but you're going to have all these teams that are terrible eventually they're going to win one. Something's going to break the wrong way. There's going to be a bounce. There's going to be something crazy. I look at what happened in that Denver and Indy game. That game was a push. And then Indy just decides to give a defensive touchdown up with like 15 seconds left to go in the game.
Oh, I was certainly going to bring that up.
Yeah. To take what was basically a push. You know, and to give a win. So that's just sort of the golden touch that you have right now. And that ends. And it ends. And when it ends ugly.
Yes, it does. But I was absolutely going to point out that's one of those games that you absolutely, it's a gift. It's served up on a silver platter. You know it's a gift because you're looking at the point spread and you're looking at it coming down to the end. You're going, okay, what do I need to happen here for me to come back and cover this spread? I need a strip sack fumble, and I need the D to pick it up and take it to the house. And there's the fumble. There's the defense picking it up and going to the house. That's exactly what I needed, and that's exactly what I got. The only thing I'll say in my defense for that lucky-ass pick is that if there's a defense out there that's going to pull that off, it's going to be the Denver Broncos. So I was glad to be on the right side of that because they're playing amazing football, even going back to last season. My prediction of them not making the playoffs this year was basically predicated on they can't play that well as a team consistently for a whole year like that because they put it on basically starting in the first game of the playoffs all the way through to the Super Bowl. They went on a run. That defense went on a run of quality, smash mouth, kick ass, turnover creating, sack football, just as suffocating as you could get. And to think that they could continue that quality of play the first two games, and it might be, you know, simple as the quality of the opponent. Maybe once they start playing some teams that have much better offensive lines, then there might be a different issue. But you start out with Carolina, who protects Cam Newton somewhat decently, but as we know, Cam likes to run and create his own play. So when he gets out, he gets dinged around and smashed over and over and over again. And then you move on to Indianapolis, who can't protect Andrew Luck to save their lives. So it's a couple of good opponents to keep that smash mouth defense going, and they did what they had to do to cover the number for me on Sunday.
Yeah, and that's just one of those little crazy things that happens from time to time. We won't talk about all the weird, crazy covers or wins or things that have turned victory from the jaws of defeat or the other way around. And that was really the one that sort of stood out to me. That went from a win to a push to a loss in about a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, yeah. Okay. All right. So good. Get it out of the way in week two. You know, this isn't like last year where the whole season ends up turning around on the crazy ass Hail Mary in that Green Bay Detroit game.
Wow.
That was another one that you won on, you know, so you've been getting to some of the crazy wins where usually it's me, you know, able to talk about how, hey, what about that crazy cover? Yeah. So Denver definitely won the game, but you know, we didn't look through that whole game as Denver being 14 points better than the Colts. I mean, Denver had to take the lead late in that game.
Yeah, it was a curious game to watch because it seemed that the Colts were sort of a step behind the whole way, but they kept hanging around, they kept hanging in it.
Right.
And
which was what Denver I said they were gonna do.
Yeah, yeah. Never had to pull out that crazy backdoor cover. They made those plays exactly when they needed to. Before the turnover to cover, the Shane Ray fumble recovery after Von Miller strips Andrew Luck. Before that, there was Aqib Talib breaking on the ball and taking it to the house for 45 yards that put Denver up 10 at that point. So, again, Denver, big-time defensive plays. It's what they do. It's amazing the knack that they have for doing it. Starting their season with these first two games at home, being able to do it as well with that great home field advantage that they've always had there. Really interested to see what they do when they go on the road and when they face stiffer offensive line competition. And now, of course, without DeMarcus Ware, who got hurt in this game, is going to be out It's a serious injury. I forget if he's out for the rest of the year or if it's just for several weeks, but he's going to miss a lot of time, and that's a big deal. So we'll see what happens with them down the road. But yeah, that was one of those games where you're looking at a team playing better, showing themselves to be better, but the Colts still just hang around and hang around. And it's kind of like someone like me that's on the Denver side thinking, uh-oh, you know, this might be one of those situations where the Colts find a way at the end to just come through. And you sort of said that making your pick, that Andrew Luck finding a way to come through in the fourth quarter, which he's done so many times. And it was shaping up to be one of those deals, but he gets the touchdown to come back. Frank Gore shuffling it in the end zone to make it 23-20 to get that cover for you. And then, like I said, the crazy play at the end when Von Miller gets the strip to cover the number. So it was one of those tests. It was a bit of a test for Denver, and they passed the test, but it's interesting. It's setting up to be the Broncos in the AFC West, maybe defending their title a lot stiffer than I thought they would. They're not going to give it up. The Chiefs are coming. The Raiders are coming. They both took a step back this week, but it looks like the Broncos aren't going to be going anywhere anytime soon.
You know, that's for sure. I mean, and, you know, they definitely get a little bit more of a test this week. You know, they got those first two at home. Now they get to go to Cincinnati. And that's going to be – I'm sure we'll be talking about that one in a little more detail on our Saturday show, because that's, you know, for the games that we have that are shaping up as possible highlight games, that one's staring right in our face. That's a pretty obvious one, because that's definitely a marquee style matchup. So it'll be interesting to see how that one shakes up. We get Trevor Siemian gets to go on the road, a little bit more hostile environment. Cincinnati's got to be a little sore after losing to Pittsburgh, where they've been in the game where they really never got anything going. You know, which was the one pick that I got against you, going with the Steelers at home. I went against my own corollary and actually got a win.
Yeah. It was one of those weeks, I guess, but it certainly worked. And you said that that was going to be a sloppy, ugly game with the weather as well. So you nailed that one in every way. That was kind of hard to watch. Usually it's been hard to watch Cincinnati and Pittsburgh going back from last year. It's been hard to watch because of all the violence and hard hitting, and this was just hard to watch just because it wasn't very good football.
There were a lot of games where that qualified this last week. The Sunday night game, the Monday night game, that Cincinnati-Pittsburgh game was not very good football. I guess we should point out briefly that we both won our locks of the week. So after we both lost them, we both turned around and won our locks, so we should feel good about that. But the game that you won your lock on was that Detroit-Tennessee game, and that was almost unwatchable. You know, LA-Seattle was a bad game. There's a lot of bad football. So I don't know if this is a function of the fact that a lot of the better players just aren't playing in the preseason. So we're basically watching extended, you know, like, what do they call it? Extended spring training for baseball. We're basically watching that now, that there's just not a lot of very good, crisp, exciting football being played. And I look up and down at most of the results, and it sort of bore that out there. I mean, really, what game stood out as being a great game this last week? You know, you had New England throttling Miami until Jimmy Garoppolo gets hurt. So now we get 2 weeks of Jacoby Brissett, Brisket. I don't.
Jack Brisket coming to the rescue.
Jack, yeah. And then you have Cleveland putting the screws to Baltimore until McClown gets hurt, and then, you know, they get a third stringer in there. I don't even know what his name is, and Baltimore is able to come back. You know, Baltimore's going to feel all great about coming back in that game, but Josh McClown was lighting them up. Almost like we said that would happen. I mean, we both had brown fever this last week, and we still ended up getting a very cheap cover. We basically got hooked on the positive side in that game because Baltimore needed to cover 5 and a hook and won by 5.
Now, down 20 to nothing and come back to win 25-20, but yeah, still doesn't cover the spread. Now, is that so Ravens? Does that count, or is that you have a stiff, hard definition of that so Ravens? Because that's pretty messed up.
Losing the game would have been up until McClown got hurt. That was the so Ravens. I mean, that was exactly what we expected out of them. They get that sort of ugly win over Buffalo the first week, and we just know Baltimore's going to go on the road. Right? RG3 is hurt, and it's going to be McCown, and yeah, Baltimore's going to go in there. They're going to kill these guys. We do better. But we saw the same thing in that Miami-New England game. New England was just annihilating the Dolphins, and then, of course, once Garoppolo goes out and they have to put in the third-string quarterback, and he truly is a third stringer. You can't call him the backup because he was not getting the reps in the preseason because they were still needing to keep Brady fresh. So Brady and Garoppolo got the lion's share of the work in the preseason. So this kid who's starting tomorrow night does not have a lot of prep or game prep. And he's got a very short week of practice. And Miami started all of a sudden coming back in that game, and Miami made that a game. I mean, that ended up being 31-24 for a game that was, 20-0, 23-0. I mean, it was a blowout. I mean, I actually tweeted something out about the Dolphins being just junk because I'm watching, we have Red Zone channel on all day on Sunday because the Packers were in primetime. So I'm watching Red Zone all day, and it's just, New England touchdowns and Miami playing like crap and New England touchdowns and more of the same, rinse and repeat. And all of a sudden Garoppolo falls on his shoulder and I'm watching that play and I'm thinking immediately, you know, collarbone, separated shoulder, doesn't matter because if it was more than a 2-week injury, Brady's coming back. So he could be out for the season for all they care. And all of a sudden Miami starts coming back. So we get to see some. The only thing that would have been more perfect would have been if New England was playing Cleveland this week.
Ooh.
So that we could have had both of the third string quarterbacks.
Versus Cody Kessler?
Oh.
Yeah. So what we need is this Kessler kid to get hurt so that the Browns can now have 6 great weeks of starting a different quarterback. We're just going to have the Browns are going to start a different quarterback in every game all season.
I read somewhere that it was funny. They've got a guy on their roster that started more games at quarterback in the NFL than Kessler or anyone else that's in their quarterback depth. It's just that he doesn't play quarterback anymore. It's Terrell Pryor who started 10 games for the Oakland Raiders. But I don't think they're going to go to that extreme. Although,
why not?
I've also read that New England is not even bothering to bring in a backup for this Jake Brisket guy. Apparently their backup quarterback tomorrow night, if he gets hurt, is going to be Edelman.
Yeah,
and
Julian Edelman.
That's asking for trouble, I believe. But Bill Belichick's the genius, so what do we know? He's the one that has all the answers, and he pushes the buttons, and everything just happens to work. And that also will lead into, at the end of the show, which way our pick is going to go, because this is basically going to have to be, if anyone is picking New England to win this game tomorrow night over the Texans, they're doing it on blind faith that anything Bill Belichick does works. And that would have given you a big upset victory in week 1 at Arizona because nobody thought they were going to compete in that game. And they've not only competed, but actually won. So there's already precedent just this season that maybe you should go with Bill Belichick against all odds, no matter what the situation is. We'll see how each of us are leaning in that game later on.
Right, but the thing that you pointed out in the last show, in the last pick show, and correctly enough, was that, and this had more to do with the Arizona pick, because I think we saw more of the real Arizona Cardinals last week than we saw in week 1, where they still basically should have won the game. I mean, they were embarrassed, but they could have escaped with a win if Catanzaro just hits that 47-yard field goal. And then that would have been taken a little bit of the sting out of it. But the point that you made properly was that New England had all the preparation intact for that game.
Yeah, that kid's been looking forward to that for a couple of years now.
And then he goes out, rides the momentum, starts lighting up, just lighting up the Dolphins. And then he hurts himself. And then you saw the change. If that would have, if that game had kept going, if there had been, you know, if football had 18-minute quarters, the Patriots would probably have lost that game. Because New England had all the momentum once Garoppolo went out. For some reason, everything changed, whether it was the defensive play calls, maybe they started playing back a little bit. The offense couldn't they couldn't do anything. It'll be very interesting because this isn't a situation where this Jacoby Brissett has been waiting all offseason just to play J.J. Watt and the Texans.
Nope. You got 3 days to prepare, kid. Good luck. Go for it. Go get him.
So I hate to say it, but I sure hope we don't see Julian Edelman under center tomorrow night.
They better hope not either. I don't think that would work out very well.
So, yeah. All right. Well, obviously, we get to pick that at the end of the show. But, yeah, definitely two situations there worth talking about with these two teams already on their third quarterback.
Let's do our plugs here. You're listening live, of course. The only place you can listen live, blogtalkradio.com/InMuchLessDetail, where we anticipate our super fan, our Steelers super fan caller, Bryce from Brooklyn, calling in and giving us crap somewhere along the way, but we'll see. You can email us at any time with any questions or comments. You would send that to inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. You can send Jason a tweet at IMLDJTG. You can send me a tweet at IMLDDre. All of our picks are always up on our blog, and the website for that is inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. And if you are listening live and you want to listen to our hour-long show and then whatever after show that we do after that, because we have an after show after we go off the air live, there are many places you can go to find our podcast to listen to that. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes on your Apple device. Just search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast. And on your Android device, you can sign up through the TuneIn mobile app or Mixcloud or whatever your favorite podcasting app may be. We're probably on there. Just search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast, for the always low, low price of free. Some weirdness, more weirdness going on in the picks of the other guys that pick every game against the spread. We are going to be down to looking at one guy and looking at his picks every week. I am making the executive decision to stop looking at Pro Football Focus Eric Eager, because this son of a bitch, this is bad enough. The first week that he picks three games in which he says, whatever the point spread is, that's what I'm predicting. Like Steelers minus three, picked Steelers by three. That was terrible enough. Then at the top of his column for week two's picks, he put some bogus record up there that had one push, and it was like 8-5-1, I think, or something. And I have no idea where he got one push from when he picked three games to be a push. And I don't know what he's counting as a win and how can you count anything as a win or a loss if you pick the Steelers to win by three and that's what the spread is? There is no win or loss. You just basically picked what the spread was. There's nothing. I did not understand how he arrived at that record. Then the coup de grace is you only have to go down to the second game that he picked. It was the Texans against the Kansas City Chiefs, and his spread that he used was Houston minus 2.5. And you know what his prediction was for that game?
Push.
He actually had the word push for a 2.5-point spread. You said push because you thought that was just ridiculous and you were just throwing it out there trying to be funny. No, this motherfucker had the word push up there for a 2.5-point spread. I immediately stopped looking at the rest of his picks. Yeah. And I deleted his link. I'm done.
He had them winning 16.5-14. Duh.
How the fuck do you pick a push on a 2.5-point spread? I don't know what's going on with that guy, but Eric Eager, you're dead to me. I'm not dealing with Pro Football Focus anymore. That's just completely out the window. Shutdown Corner, Yahoo Shutdown Corner's Frank Schwab came back to earth after a great first week. He went 6-10 in week two, but hey, at least he, for all of his craziness, at least he doesn't pick a push. For all the things that he does that is sort of stinky and you kind of wonder, did he really pick that? Because he's had some issues over the years picking games that we didn't see what his pick was. He put the pick up after the game was over. We chronicled that a little
Thursday
bit.
Night. It's usually Thursday nights.
And he's moved on to saying, if you want to see my Thursday night picks, here's my Twitter handle. Go follow me on Twitter and you can see what my Thursday night pick is before the Thursday game, which again, I'm not going to do it just on principle. I'm not following you on Twitter to get one pick. You have a blog. You have an entire blog on the Yahoo network, which is I think Yahoo's kind of big. I think they make a little money. I think they can afford to put up an extra blog post with your Thursday pick if you wanted to do that, but he doesn't want to do that. He wants to go on Twitter and try to build up his followers in that way.
Exactly. See, it's all about the mass marketing for the Twitterverse. He's trying to get, you know, people to subscribe to him and follow him basically by going, you know, he's baiting people.
If you want to see my picks,
he's pulling a Seacrest. He's pulling a Ryan Seacrest, you know, or a reality show thing where they build up all the drama and then they'll be like, right after this commercial break, you know.
Oh, man, and that's not just that show. That's not just entertainment reality shows. That's every show. HGTV shows that my wife likes to watch. Right.
That's
Food Network reality shows. That's the HGTV. TV, whatever this House Hunters renovation that my wife likes to watch. Every single show, there's an unseen complication that comes up, and oh, what's going to happen when they walk into the bathroom and see that there's water leaking? Oh my goodness! Come back after the break and see. Just everything is like that.
Yeah, they'll actually show the people walk in the room and have the reaction, but then they cut to break so you don't see what they're reacting to.
Yes, you got it.
That's any show. That's exactly that could be the right show where they're looking for freaking Bigfoot. Or looking for ghosts or any. This is the way it is now. So that's all this guy is trying to do. Don't hate on the guy.
Don't hate on the guy. The bullshit. I'm not hating on him. I'm just calling bullshit. I'm not following it on Twitter. That's all.
Just to show you how messed up this season is so far. That guy's ahead of me, so you know it's messed up.
It's only 2 weeks, as you already know. So my Nostra Thomas of the week was even better than saying that Tennessee was going to go to Detroit and win the game, which they did. Even better than that was saying it was getting cute and picking the actual point amount in which I'm going to get cute and call the score by this many points, and it actually comes through by that many points. The Saints were 4-point underdogs at the New York Giants, and I said, this smells like a last-minute field goal win by the Giants, and I'm picking the Saints to lose by 3 and 3 only, and that's why I'm taking New Orleans, and that's exactly what happened. However, it's not like I can take complete credit because neither one of us saw the low point total for that game. What happened to the points in that game? That was supposed to be another rip roaring like last year's game, and it was not even close.
No, nobody saw that being just a total dog shit game. No. And not just a total dog shit game, but a game where the Giants actually had the ball like first and goal at the 1 yard line and basically just did 3 kneel downs. In effect, instead of just punching the ball into the end zone, they decided we're going to put this on the foot of our kicker and the hands of our holder. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And then that was all set up. Basically, you know, it was a long bomb, and there was a couple plays before that where he had Odell Beckham for a touchdown right up the sideline, and he dropped it. Beckham basically just dropped the touchdown, and I'm just like, oh. So once again, the win for me is just right there, but it just couldn't happen. So it's that feeling of, okay, you know what? I'm losing these picks, but it's one of those like all is not lost feelings. Like, oh, what am I going to do? It's the NFL. It's going to be weird. This is why 500 really is sort of that gold standard. I mean, if you win just as many as you lose, against the spread, you're doing okay.
No good kid. The spread is meant to even everything out. Every game is supposed to be, theoretically, one side of the spread or the other is like splitting hairs. The spread is supposed to make everything just completely as even as possible. So, yeah, to do anything over 500 is absolutely impressive.
Right, especially if you go to Vegas, that's why the point spread's there. The point spread's there, so it makes sucker bets possible. You know, you just know a team is going to lose, but then you look at those points. You know, oh man, I got to take those points.
They're going to lose by that much, though.
Exactly. So you know, this is why you don't go to Vegas and just bet straight up. This is why you and I stopped picking games straight up. Because it was just too easy.
Well, it was not a challenge anymore.
Right. Yeah, after, what, 3 or 4 years of doing that, we're like, oh man. Yeah, I mean, that's back in the days when we had 15 in 1 week.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
no one ever went perfect, but we came close. Right.
We've never had a 16-0. I want to say 13, maybe the best we've ever had in against a spread week. I think we've had a couple of 13-3s. You know, and I know in the bye week periods that I've, you know, a couple of us have had like that 9-2-1 where, right. where it's been really impressive, but I don't think any time ever in 25 years, any one of us has ever had a 16-0 week ever.
Oh no. And also I can't remember any week where anyone's had less than 3 wins. No one's had a 0-16 or a 1-15 or anything like that. So.
We've had plenty of threes.
Yeah, there's been some 3-13s through the years. There's no doubt about that.
And more 5-11s and 6-10s than we would like to admit.
So the teams that are maybe panicking after not looking so good after starting, I know there's going to be the what's wrong with the Seattle Seahawks, even though they're not 0-2, they're 1-1. But the win was very unimpressive, and of course the loss was to the Rams, who looked like garbage. I don't think there's much to answer as far as that goes. Obviously, Russell Wilson taking such a huge weapon away from him, where he couldn't run because he had the bum ankle. He has 5 carries for 14 yards in this game against the Rams, and that is absolutely not a typical Russell Wilson game. So I don't know about you. I'm not worried about the Seahawks at all.
It wasn't so much that he couldn't run or that he didn't want to run. It was that the threat of him running was gone. So the Rams didn't even have to worry about defending him running.
Right.
It more than anything else. So we'll see. He claims that he's better. Although San Francisco, as crap as San Francisco is, I will say they actually went to Carolina and acquitted themselves very well. They kept flirting with screwing up my lock of the week. I never really worried about them winning the game because I did have Carolina in my eliminator pool this last week. I never worried about San Francisco going out and outright winning the game, but they got within the number of that 13-13 and a hook several times in that game, and Carolina basically just kept putting them to bed. But you look at San Francisco, they've scored a ton of points the first 2 weeks. And what I'm saying is, if Russell Wilson's not right, this doesn't necessarily look like the beatdown that I think everyone is suspecting this is going to be with San Francisco going to Seattle right now, because it's really starting to feel like the old adage right now. You know, that's like a 9.5-point line right now. And let's say that's a 10-point line by the time we make our pick. I'd hate to say it, but you can't cover 10 if you can't score 10. And boy, it's starting to really feel that way. I'm not trying to give away a pick here, because I could still look at that game and go, yeah, but they're the 49ers. But something just doesn't look sharp with Seattle. But they've started seasons slow the last few years. I mean, they have had issues in the past, and all of a sudden they sort of break out of that funk, you know, few weeks into the season, and then they never look back. So I'm not worried about Russell, them. So if you're asking what my level of worry is for the Seahawks, I would say not that much, because we can bag on that offense as much as we want, but let's not forget the fact that they're not really giving up many points either. They've given up 19 points in two games.
Right. That's the main reason I'm not worried about them.
Right. The problem is they've only scored 15 points in those two games.
And I was going to say Russell Wilson, however, last year towards the end, put together a 3 or 4 week stretch where he was balls out. So he can do that. We know he can do that when healthy. We'll just have to wait to see when he gets healthy.
One of the other teams. I'd just be curious to look at, you know, with them scoring 15 points, how many teams have already had 15 plus point quarters this year? And you've got the Seahawks who've scored 15 points in two full games.
And one of the other teams to draw possible panic and what's wrong with, and I've seen them being written about what's wrong with them already. What's wrong with the Washington Redskins, who start out 0-2 at home this season? And I've read about some locker room grumbling already about the play of Kirk Cousins, who had times in this game, this loss to the Dallas Cowboys, times where he looked sharp and times when he definitely didn't.
There was a point late in that game where the Redskins were up. I want to say they were up 3. And they were driving, and then Kirk Cousins pulls his best Matty Ice impersonation and throws the soul-crushing interception deep in the end zone, just right to the guy. He throws just
third
throws
down
it right.
At the 6-yard line.
Yeah. So the worst possible scenario is, well, the best possible scenario is a touchdown. The worst possible scenario is turnover. Everything else in between basically is a field goal, right? Or a field goal attempt, and you go up by 6, and you put all the pressure on the Cowboys. But no, you're up by 3, where you're looking to go up by 10, and just put the game away, and you throw the pick, and then all of us, now all the options. I think a team that's working down the field with that option of scoring either the touchdown or the field goal can still keep the defense guessing. And the Cowboys just boom, 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 right down the field, you know? I believe it was 23-20 at that point.
It was. The funny part about keeping them guessing is that the first two plays before the third down interception were they're trying to get this rookie Josh Doctson involved. They're desperately trying to get him as the big play guy because he's got some height on him. So they're trying to make it, okay, he's going to be our guy. He's going to be our guy that goes up and gets to jump ball when we're close. He's not ready to be that guy, not in the NFL anyway. He might have done that in college, but they kept trying to force these fade patterns in the end zone to Josh Doctson, and he couldn't make any plays on the ball because he's not good enough yet. And then at third down comes, and now you know what. One thing they're not going to do is throw a fade pattern in the corner for Josh Doctson. And that opens up a lot of other ways you can defend them. And they wind up cutting right across the middle of the end zone. And Cousins guns it right to Barry Church. He obviously never saw him. But your options get limited when you keep trying to force the same play to the same guy over and over again. It's obviously not going to work. And that's one guy that you can kind of take your attention off of. And you know you don't have to defend him because he's not effective right now.
Right. And the options I was talking about were the options that the Redskins were forcing onto the Cowboys going the other way. And by not scoring any points, you left the Cowboys with the option with enough time left to kick a field goal or go for the win, you know, to score the touchdown late. And it's always, you never want to be up by 3. It's, you know, it's always better to be up by more. But those teams that are up by 4, 5, 6 tend to hold on to win a lot more often than the teams that are up by 3 because you are forcing the other team to have to score a touchdown. So all the Redskins needed there was a field goal, and now you're forcing Dak Prescott on the road to have to score a touchdown to win the game versus making your defense have to play to keep them out of both field goal and touchdown range. And it just put that interception was just – that, like I said, that was the soul-crushing interception. That was the Matty Ice move right there.
It really was. But as far as going off of that game and the game before, and am I worried about the Redskins long-term, I'm actually not so worried about them either. And the reason is because in between the soul-crushing mistakes and the inaccuracies, Kirk Cousins is still – basically playing well. He's not playing flawlessly, obviously, not anywhere close. But the Redskins are still getting yardage. They're still moving the football. They're not even getting production out of their running game yet. So if Matt Jones ever gets going, that'll be another weapon. But good God, they got some athletes that make some catches on that team between the tight end Jordan Reed and DeSean Jackson, who got hurt. So I don't think he's going to be playing in this upcoming game. Pierre Garçon is still a very good possession receiver. Jamison Crowder actually was making some good plays out there. So I'm not so worried about the Redskins and their defenses, you know, have struggles as always. That they need to, what they really need to do is sort out the back end situation on their defense with Josh Norman and Brashad Breeland, because they're still trying to figure out, is Norman going to shadow the best receiver? Is he going to stay right there on that one side? What's he going to do? It seemed like they were going back and forth in this game. It seemed like he shadowed Dez Bryant when Dallas made it into the red zone. But before that, he wasn't shadowing him. He was staying on the same side, and Dez Bryant was lighting up Brashad Breeland just like Antonio Brown did the week before. So they need to get that sorted out pronto. And yet I'm still not worried, because their offense still looks pretty good overall.
Yeah, and the thing they have to not worry about if you're the Redskins or a Redskins fan is that division is still garbage. They're all just gonna whoop up on each other. You know, Carson Wentz is not going to the Hall of Fame in his first two games. There's gonna be some regression there. So you're gonna see the Eagles, you know, they're not there. What are they, real or are they pretenders? The Giants, we still don't know what to make of that sort of new look defense. And then you've got the Cowboys, and how long are they going to get? You know, I mean, Dak Prescott, honestly, they could be 2-0 right now, but they could also be 0-2. And
yes,
you know, so very, very close division. So obviously, this isn't one of those where I'd be stunned if the Redskins went on a roll. And all of a sudden, the next thing you know, they win five out of their next six. They're 5-3 and sitting at the top or within a game at the top of that division. Wouldn't be stunned at all.
So those are the teams, from my viewpoint, that might have a reason to start panicking after week two, a la the Buffalo Bills. But to me, I don't think they are nearly as dire as the Bills are. And then the teams that look better than anticipated after 2 weeks, I know where I have to start. I have to eat crow and talk about Bryce's team, the Steelers, and the fact that I didn't pick him to make the playoffs. And after 2 weeks, there is nothing I can take away from what the Pittsburgh Steelers have done. I can't go anywhere near the Steelers. All the weapons missing on offense, trying to figure out their defensive playmakers, and were they going to stay hungry and come back after last season. Looks like they're just as hungry, especially Ryan Shazier. I can't say anything bad about the Steelers right now. They are playing hellified football right now, and I don't know if there's any way that I could, if I had to redo my playoff scenario in the AFC, I don't know if there's any way I could keep the Steelers out after 2 weeks. If I had to redo it again, they look like certainly one of the best teams in football.
Yeah, there's a line from a movie where somebody from the movie said it's better to burn out than to fade away. And that's what I worry about with the Steelers, is that they're just going to burn so bright and that it's just going to be over, you know, because it's only going to take, I think Roethlisberger, if they lose him, that whole offense loses its luster. And if they bang him up, and he's going to get banged up, and this is the only concern, if you're a Steelers fan, it looks amazing right now. How is it going to look once the weather starts getting cold? You know, everything starts getting a little bit tighter. I mean, that's the only thing I worry about for them, because right now for the Pittsburgh Steelers, everything is just, that arrow is pointing up. I just wonder if we're going to still be having the same discussion, you know, Thanksgiving time or, you know, Christmas time, as we get start getting towards the end of the season and looking at the playoff picture, if the Steelers are still going to be just firing on all cylinders and then just on this rocket ship towards the playoffs and the Super Bowl. And I don't know. I don't know, because you know, I think health is their enemy. I mean, the health is the enemy of every team, but I think more so than any other team, the thing that's going to keep them rolling the most is keeping Roethlisberger clean. And his problem is that he'll try to play through the injuries. I mean, he'll try to gut anything out, and then it'll almost end up being to a detriment. So they need to really keep him. They need to keep him upright, and they need to keep him in rhythm.
And no fireworks in that Bengals-Pittsburgh game. Everybody was on their best behavior. We'll see how that changes in Week 15 when Vontaze Burfict comes back.
Right. So, yeah.
Another team looking great after 2 weeks against maybe all odds, the Minnesota Vikings, who you hated Sam Bradford even more than me. Your Sam Bradford hate eclipsed even me when you made a contingency pick saying if he gets the start, you're going against him. And he got the start, and he actually looked, dare I say, somewhat impressive against the Packers on Sunday night.
He looked all right throwing to Stephon Diggs. Stephon Diggs looked great.
Yeah.
And yes, you know, and Bradford, I'll give Bradford credit. They hit him. I mean, they were hitting him. There were a lot of throws that he made as, you know, looking like he was about to get just smashed. And that ball got out of there, and there was a lot of stuff open for them deep. Packers, Mike McCarthy outcoached himself again. I still don't understand them going for the fourth down.
Oh my God, that was so weird.
Early in the game, instead of just taking the field goal, boy, that field goal sure would have come in handy later on, or as things happen, because wouldn't you know it, you don't get it on fourth down, and the Vikings turn right around, go down the length of the field, and score a touchdown. You could almost just sense that. I mean, that was that weird feeling that I had watching that game when the Packers went for that fourth down and they didn't get it. I'm like, you know, first of all, what are you doing? You deserve to lose. That's just dumb. You don't have the offensive line. Then you run James Starks instead of running Eddie Lacy, and then you end up being about a foot short. So I don't know, but something tells me that Eddie Lacy's got a couple more cheeseburgers in him, a little more fuel than James Starks does, that maybe could have pushed that pile and that maybe you could have gotten the first down. So just Mike McCarthy, and every once in a while, you know, I'll bag on Mike McCarthy, and he thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. And in this situation, I think it didn't necessarily cost them the win, but it really put them in a bad spot having to come back against a good defense. And the Packers offense, it's not right. Did you watch the game? I'm assuming.
Yeah.
It was like you couldn't put your finger on it, but something just felt out of place. Like you were watching it. I felt like I was watching the TV through those glass bricks that they put in bathrooms, you know, where you can see the light on the other side, but you can't make anything out through the glass. That's sort of the way I thought when I was watching that game. It's like, you know I'm watching this Packers offense, but I don't recognize anything that I'm seeing. I didn't see any of that play action. I didn't see any of Aaron Rodgers trying to do his improvisation. He looked detached almost from everything. Every time they showed him on the sidelines, it looked like he wasn't even paying attention to what was going on. I really couldn't put my finger on it. They sort of got lucky in that Jacksonville game because Jacksonville really gave them a game. And I don't know if the Packers thought that they're just going to roll into Minnesota because they don't have their quarterback. They're going to be starting the guys. And they're just, you know, we talk about teams that they just show up and expect to win, and they usually don't. And it wasn't on that, you know, for as much as Bradford did and Stephon Diggs did, Packers still held them to 17. So it wasn't like they were just out there just getting just toasted for the whole game. The Packer defense was getting a lot of punts, and I don't like to talk about punters a lot on this show, but this Packers punter, every punt of his was like 30 yards. I was like, what is going on? I've never heard of this guy before. And we don't really talk about punters on this show, but I noticed that every time he kicked the punt, Al Michaels talked about how short the punt was. And you're just looking at it like, okay, they're punting from their own 15, And the guy is basically fair catching it at midfield. And I'm like, ooh, way to flip the field position, guys. I'm stunned I haven't seen anything come through this week that the Packers aren't trying out punters or, you know, getting a new punter on the team. Because if you're going to play some defense or your offense is going to stink, you need to be able to pin the other team deep and give your defense a chance and not keep giving the other team a short field. So just an ugly game, but something to me, I think it's more about, I hate to say it's more about Green Bay not looking right than it was about the things all that Minnesota was doing so far.
I guess I saw it a little different. I thought Green Bay's offense did resemble the old offense. It wasn't exactly where they need to be or where they used to be a couple years ago. But I definitely noted some balls out McCarthy play calls early. There was a 3rd-and-2 play fake to get a bomb for Davante Adams, who drew a pass interference in the end zone. And that led to the first touchdown of the game. And there were a couple of other moments like that as well, where Rodgers was able to play fake, get some time, and go deep looking for some big plays downfield. I think I honestly would just give the credit to the Vikings defense why they weren't able to do that more and more as the game went on. The Vikings tightened up and started busting them in the fucking mouth a little bit. And also, there was a little weirdness. They seemed to try to start focusing more on individual cornerbacks to try to pick on them. They were trying to work on what they felt were the Vikings' weaknesses. First, it was we know about Trey Waynes, and he wound up getting his revenge at the end of the game, but they were picking on somebody else before that. But they were just trying to work on certain guys, and that was the game plan, it seemed like. And it was kind of working, but they weren't finishing their drives. And I'd credit that to the Vikings really bowing up when they had to and making some big plays defensively.
Yeah, and instead of trying to work on guys, why don't you just throw to the open guys? That's always been Aaron Rodgers' mantra, has been, you know, my favorite receivers, the one who's open, you know, I'm just going to throw it to the guy who's open. They were making big gains over the middle. They were hitting Cook over the middle quite a bit, the new tight end, and then all of a sudden they stopped trying to do that, and they start trying to throw these, you know, little cutesy stuff to the outside, and it ends up biting them in the ass in the end of the game with Trey Waynes getting his, you know, giving a little bit of comeuppance to the Packers for picking on him for the whole game. But I guess we better make a pick here, huh? We've left ourselves our customary 2 minutes.
Yeah, that's how we do things. Didn't really get to talk much about the Houston Texans and how impressive they looked in beating Kansas City, getting their revenge for the playoff game last year. Texans defense over the first two games looks like something formidable, something to behold. Another team that I didn't think was going to this year, but your boy Brock Osweiler, he might be leading him to something. Who knows? So we know about the injury situation with the Patriots quarterback. It's going to be Jacoby Brissett, a rookie quarterback, is going to get the start for New England at home tomorrow night, Thursday night football on the short week. Houston Texans 2-0, New England Patriots 2-0, and the Thursday point spread is pick 'em.
Yeah, so I think this line is actually love for the Patriots. Because there's no way that the Texans with that defense at 2-0 should be going in against a third-string quarterback who looked like absolute dog shit in that game last week against Miami. No way this should be a pick'em. Maybe it's the sucker bet. Maybe I'm betting against the genius, but I got to take the Texans in that defense against a guy making his first start with 3 days of practice.
You are not going to be alone feeling like that. A lot of other people are going to feel that way. They didn't let that kid go for more than trying to make it. I'm not buying it. Houston all the way, and my lock of the week. Houston Texans pick up over the genius Bill Belichick and the Patriots. More on our after show when we come. coming to our VIP after show program. I'm courting danger. I'm going full on against the genius of Bill Belichick, and I'm making it my lock of the week because I can't imagine that Texans defense, the way they played the first 2 weeks, letting a kid who has no NFL experience except for three quarters where he had no preparation, and now he's got a short week to try to prepare for them. I just can't imagine them letting him beat them.
Yeah, in an offense that only relies on timing, the only thing that keeps that offense going is that it's on schedule and the guys are exactly where they need to be and they're in complete sync with the quarterback. And I think the thing that we sort of underestimated, overlooked, was that, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo had that whole, he had all the OTAs, he had all the mini camps, he had the whole preseason. He knew he was going to be the guy. He got to work on all the precision, all the timing, building the rapport with the receivers, and it was really working. And if it's the system. And then he gets hurt, and they should bring in Jacoby Brissett. He's going to light on fire. And God, that was horrible. I mean, they didn't trust him to do anything. And I mean, I'd hate to say it, but think about this. They went all the way to Castle when Brady gets hurt, right? Castle is that contract. Brady gets hurt again. Garoppolo looks amazing. They turn around and they win this game. I think that actually starts to hurt Tom Brady's legacy a little bit because then all of a sudden he's the system quarterback. It's not him. So if they can win with just anybody, what do they need Tom Brady for? You know, because so there you go. Courting a little controversy in the after show here.
Oh, if the Patriots fans get a hold of that, if that was Skip Bayless saying that, it would be millions and millions of tweets sent out against him. How dare you call Tom Brady a system quarterback? He's terrific, Tom. He's the greatest. But we've kind of had that discussion a little bit before on the show when we talk about we don't sit there and rank the greatest quarterbacks of all time or the greatest anything because it's a bit of a pointless exercise. But I think we're both in the same categories. There's people who have said Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time, and both of us have said no.
But I'm also one of the ones that I also cringe whenever I hear people say Elway was the greatest quarterback of all time. No. Because I was there. I watched him, yes, get teams to the Super Bowl, but I watched him get annihilated time after time after time after time. And you want to be known as being this big comeback quarterback. The only way you have a lot of comebacks is because you're losing. Nobody ever talks about all the Joe Montana comebacks because they didn't need to come back. But you hear about these, things, and everybody, it's always got to be the big, the big overstatement. It's got to be the hyperbole. It's got to be, let's take the hot take. Let's take everything to the extreme. But if we were going to sit around and just have a complete bullshit conversation about the greatest quarterbacks of all time, I don't know if I'm throwing Tom Brady's name out there. And, and the tendency is to remember now, it's like every time there's a top 10 list or some BS like that, and you get some snot-nosed kids writing for an internet site, and they're going to put up like the top 10 Super Bowl teams. Wow, look at that. Eight of the top 10 were in the last decade, because that's what you remember. You're not going to think back because you weren't there. All you can see are these old, John Facenda highlights, and that's all you get to see from these old games. That's why it's just such a BS conversation trying to quantify something, especially with the eras being different, the rules being different. But if we were going to have that conversation, I hate to say it, but I think I just called Tom Brady a system quarterback.
You did. That's a hashtag hot take right there, boy. That's some hot stuff. I don't know if I was
Not necessarily a game manager. I didn't go that far. I didn't call him Trent Dilfer, There's a difference. There's nothing wrong with being a system quarterback. But the thing I'm saying is if they plucked Tom Brady off of that team and put him on another team, I really think he's kind of just a guy.
Well, maybe this is backing that up, or maybe it's going against it. I'm not sure. But what I wrote down after that first quarter in New England that Jimmy Garoppolo had before he got hurt was, holy fuck, how much cash has this kid, Janine Garofalo, made in 1.25 weeks of NFL football? Because when he becomes a free agent, everyone's going to want a piece of him, because apparently he's proven to be pretty much as good as any new quarterback that's coming into the league. How can anyone say that he's worse or better than Carson Wentz or Jared Goff or any other newcomer? He's looked as good as any of them, or Dak Prescott or what have you.
Yeah.
If they were all free agents right now, Garoppolo would have a case to get as much money as any of them, and all within 1.25 weeks of football. That's the only tape. That's the only real action you have on him. And I think he'd be a pretty sought after quarterback if he were a free agent right now.
Well, look at the Minnesota Vikings, who just traded away a number 1 and a number 4 for Sam Bradford. So if I'm the Patriots, I actually re-sign Garoppolo. I give him all the money.
And then stick somebody then up him, in a trade.
And then I trade him for 2 number 1s. Yeah, exactly. Because somebody that might be the Patriots.
Cleveland Browns might be willing to give you 2 number 1s for him right now.
Wouldn't that be that so Patriots to pull something much, like that? Yeah. Because organizationally, I mean, I don't know if Pirates actually feels more like it. They're basically out there, sort of just like plundering the league. They basically rape teams in trades. They pick up free agents that nobody wants, and they turn them into at least marginal impact players. You know, and you know, basically cast-offs. Also Rans, and then they show up on the Patriots roster, and I don't know, they must drink the Kool-Aid. They start to believe. Yeah, I could totally see the Patriots re-signing Garoppolo and then flipping him for a huge haul versus just letting him walk in free agency.
Yeah, that would be definitely a Patriots type of move. But Tom Brady, of course, retiring eventually, kind of like the Cowboys with Tony Romo. You can say he's going to play forever, but he's not. Eventually, he's going to retire.
No.
So it would look more likely that the Patriots would keep Janine Garofalo around as the heir apparent, which was sort of laughable and unheard of or unthinkable as recently as last year. But now that he's shown what he's capable of with enough preparation, maybe it's not so far-fetched. Maybe this is the heir to the throne in New England, and maybe they're not going to trade him for anything after all. Or if they go with your thinking – and it's a system, it doesn't matter who you put in there, maybe they do make that trade and make Jacoby Brissett the heir apparent. Maybe it doesn't matter. It sounds like if you were running the Patriots, it wouldn't matter who's the heir apparent, because you think you could put anybody in there and basically have success no matter what.
Yeah, I would find somebody in college who fits that mold, who can run an offense competently, who runs a very similar style offense that's just, you know, timing and you know, just throw into spots. You don't have to have the greatest arm in the world. Tom Brady doesn't have the greatest arm.
No.
But Tom Brady lets go of the ball. Receivers haven't even started looking for the ball yet, and it's so precise. There's so much precision to that offense. He just knows where everybody's going to be. He's been there for so long. You know, and wow, you can't replace Tom Brady. And then Garoppolo came in and played just amazing in those two games. I mean, and what he was doing to Miami, I mean, you could not have had kids. That kid should not have been watching what he was doing to Miami. he was just shredding the Dolphins. That game was just blowout city until he got hurt. And then it got interesting. And that's part of the reason all of a sudden I'm thinking, oh, okay, it's Jacoby Brissett's going to come in. Watch, he's going to light it up. And you just keep watching the Dolphins crawling back and lots of punts, and it's not going so good. And then I was like, yeah, this isn't going to end well. This is, you know, and I see, oh, look, what's their next game? Oh, it's the Texans on Thursday night? Yeah, no, thank you.
Uh-oh.
I mean, as a pick 'em, So now that's just, you've just locked this down.
I cannot imagine this kid beating a very good defense. If it's a defense that's kind of middling that comes in, yeah, or a bad defense, maybe. But this is a good defense coming in to New England on this short week. I can't imagine him putting together enough points to win the game. And the Patriots defense has been, you know, borderline above average. They've been fine, but you know, no great defense. And they have an offense coming in Houston that's looking a lot better than either one of us thought they would under Brock Osweiler. What happened was they get this rookie Will Fuller on the other side of DeAndre Hopkins. And Fuller is the compliment for Hopkins that they've been waiting for in Houston all this time. Brian Hoyer is sitting there in Chicago holding an ice bag to his head going, why couldn't they have drafted this Fuller kid when I was down there? Because this is what the Texans offense has been needing all this time, is a second target that's going to go up and make plays on the other side of Hopkins. If you saw those highlights of the Texans-Chiefs game, Fuller was making some catches, just bailing Brock Osweiler out time after time. Just these crazy circus, incredible catches, two hands going up around defenders, over defenders, balls that are not accurate, and he snatches them out of midair, making these great catches. And Hopkins was doing what he normally does. That's what he does every game anyway. But they've got a couple of guys there that will help Osweiler look a lot better than he actually is. I think last week you said that you were still weren't impressed with Brock Osweiler. We can do this every week. We can trade off. This will be my week. That's fine. I'll take it. Week two, I'm not all that impressed with Brock Osweiler, even with the numbers that he's putting up. But when you got receivers like that to bail you out, it really does go a long way.
And it's funny that we brought up your point about the middling defenses or the bad defenses. I think we've reached this point with the modern NFL where there are no longer middling defenses or acceptable defenses. Defenses right now, they are either awesome or they are garbage. I don't think there's that league average defense left in the league. We've got teams, and you think about them, it's like they either play defense or they don't. That's it.
I consider the Patriots pretty mediocre as far as that goes. They're not great, but they're not terrible either.
Yeah.
Just off the top of my head.
Yeah, I mean, but there's not many of those. There's not many of those. The defenses seem to be either just like they fall into that category of still being able to shut people down, or they're a sieve. That's just sort of the way the NFL is broken down, where it used to be you only had a couple of those, like, oh man, that was, you just knew that those offense, awesome defensive teams, and then you had those couple, three defenses that were just like, oh God. You know, it's just a track meet every time, and everybody in the building wants to play those guys. But it seems like there's more and more of those teams, and everybody just wants to be in the game playing against those guys, because there's just, all the rules are predicated against defense and for offense. And it just seems like that you don't have that sort of middle tier, or what's there in that middle tier of defense isn't very much. It's either you skew way too far to one side of it or the other these days.
Yeah, to your point, I'm looking down the list of teams in the NFL, and I'm having a tough time picking out what I would consider middling. Right. They're either terrible or good, right?
It's very like, they're good, they're bad. They're good, they're bad. They're good, they're bad. You don't really look at someone and go, all right.
The second team I came across that I would consider that would be the Ravens, because that's just a bunch of old guys desperately trying for one last run. So they give up the big play here and there, but they still make enough borderline baseline plays. They're still good enough. They're mediocre. They're certainly not the juggernaut they used to be, but they're not trash yet.
They're just clinging to their former glory.
Yeah, once their old pass rushers fade away, they might turn to crap after that, but not quite yet.
Well, this isn't one that I ended up wanting to have to cut short, but it's a late night, and I'm staring at a 14-hour day tomorrow. So,
oh, that's fun. Yeah,
not fun.
No, that's not. I didn't really have too much anyway. That AAA title game that I went to last night, it was a thing. It happened. I was just impressed by how many people were there, because the Redbirds weren't playing, so I didn't think anybody would show up besides me. But they put a lot of people in the stands for that game. So Memphis did a very good job of hosting that game. It was on NBC Sports Network, so I'm sure it got a rating of like 0.01. So, but it was fun. It was. I'm glad I went. It was interesting. The players reacted like they won something. It was Scranton Wilkes-Barre, which is the Yankees affiliate. And they were playing El Paso, which is the Padres, and the Yankees wound up winning. They got a 3-run homer in the first off by Chris Parmalee, a name a blast from the past, and that held up the whole game. They wound up winning 3-1. And what surprised me was the players running out on the field and jumping up and down like they actually won something important, something that meant something to them. Which I didn't expect that.
It did mean something.
The season was over.
You're a heartless bastard.
It meant the season was over. That's all it meant. That it meant they could go drink now. That's
pretty much.
All right. So very abbreviated after show to what we normally do, but that's fine. Saturday night is good for you again this week.
I don't see it being a problem this week. So right. Saturday looks good.
9 o'clock Central Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Saturday night. We will be back for week 3 of the NFL, and that'll do it for us. He is Jay. I am Dre. This is In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and come back and join us live Saturday night, 9 p.m. Central.